Okay, Shalom Bayis, Shir, number two, Machlokas, if it's 1 year after the last one, or 2 years after the last one, because time flies when you're having fun. So, okay. So, a few principles before I start. And really, if anybody remembers the last year or listen to it now, there's some things I'm going to be repeating now, just as a hakdam, as an introduction. First of all, is the importance of Shalom Bayis. It's not just a question of having a peaceful household. We're talking about something that's says Ish v'Isha. You've all heard in Yeshiva brachas more times than you care to admit. Shechina Beinehem, when the Ish v'Isha, and for that reason, the Maral explains, the Shem Hashem is Nimchak, to create Shalom Bayis, you're allowed to erase the Shem Hashem, which is normally something that makes us recoil in horror, like to erase the Shem Hashem, like a Sefer Torah, imagine a Sefer Torah, it would be the equivalent of saying, it's much more, if I would say, to make Shalom Bayis, you're allowed to take a Sefer Torah and throw it on the floor and step on it. So everybody would like, no, not that. This is much, much worse. To take the Shem Hashem, the Shem HaMeforesh, as it's written in Kedusha, on a cloth, Yud Kei Vav Kei, and erase it, it's worse than what I just described. And you're allowed to do it. So the Maral explains, because you're erasing it on one end, but you're rewriting it on the other end. Because since the Shalom Bayis, the Shechina, is the Shechina, so you're inviting the Shechina to appear. So you're erasing it here, but it's appearing there, so to speak. So we have to talk about, Mr. Hashem, today we'll delve a little into understanding. It shouldn't just be a nice phrase that you hear by Yeshiva Brachas, and it sounds so beautiful and inspiring, but, you know, the last time I looked, I had Shalom Bayis, but I didn't see any Shechina. You know, what does it mean, really? What does it mean? What does it mean? It should be something real to us. It shouldn't just be a stock phrase. So the importance of Shechina Beinehem wow, who doesn't want the Shechina in their house? But it's much deeper. The Ramban in Chumash, when we talk about a Beis HaMikdash, and we talk about the Mishkan, the Ramban says that that's a recreation of the house of the Avos. That the Avos lived in a house that had the Shechina. And we can't really emulate that because we're not the Avos. So we try to recreate it by making a Beis HaMikdash. By making a Mishkan, by making a Beis HaMikdash. And when we have a Beis HaMikdash or a Mishkan, the Ramban says, we're harking back to the Madrega of our forefathers. And that's why it's in Chumash Shmos. The building of the Mishkan is in Chumash Shmos, the Ramban says, because it's all part of Yitzias Mitzrayim. It's all part of them going back to the Avos. They went to Mitzrayim and they were slaves, they were degraded, and now Hashem took them out and lifted them up, and they returned to the Madregas HaAvos, which is Bracious, at the end of Shmos, Uchvot Hashem Moleyas HaMishkan. So you see that again, we can't emulate the Avos, we can't have the Shechina in our houses the way the Avos did, but to whatever degree the words of Chazal are true, and we're going to hope to see that today. I hoped we should walk away today with an understanding of what it means, Shechina Beinehem. But you're talking about not just the fabric of the house, because it affects the children, and, you know, a good Rebbe, a good teacher, a good experienced Rebbe or teacher can actually pick out the children in the class whose parents don't have Shalom Bayis. They know it's nikar, but it's not just that. It's not just the stability of the home, as important as that is, and it's not just a lack of machlokes, but as we see from the Ramban, it's something positive. It's something that is really the fabric of Klal Yisrael. Again, it's like the Avos. We won't be on that Madrega, but it's the Beis HaMikdash. Basuli Mikdash V'Shachanti B'Socham. The Ramban says we're recreating the Shechina in the house. So talking about Shalom Bayis, and having Shalom Bayis is not just that there's no strife, and it's not just, it's a positive attribute that is part of the very fabric of Klal Yisrael. And not just because it will affect our children, and they'll grow up, and they'll have all sorts of issues, as is very many times, sadly, the case. But it's something positive, and it's something real, and so it's certainly worthwhile to talk about it and to discuss it and to have some idea of what it is, both Shalom Bayis and Shechina Beinehem, to have some grasp. It shouldn't just be pretty words. That's point one, as the Hakdama. Point two is, and I said this the last year also, I'm not just repeating. I sat down and thought about this again. You know, if I would give Shalom Bayis classes, like parenting classes, Rebbe and Salling, you know, so we could have, you know, 20 tape series of Shalom Bayis, and you talk about this angle and that angle, because there's a lot of pratim, and we are not, that's not the structure of tonight's shiur. Whether it will ever do that, I don't know. You have Robertson Samet, you have all these wonderful people. I don't know if it's as common as parenting classes, but you have things. Anyway, but that's not what tonight is. And therefore, it's going to sound like a shir. It is a shir. It's a piece of Torah. It's an understanding. I'm going to talk about an understanding, the principle, as I said last time, it's a principle. We're talking this klolim and this pratim. We can't, it would almost be pointless to sit here and talk about pratim. I wouldn't do it. To say like once a year or once every 2 years, not even once a year, we should all get together and the Rav should speak about specificities, cases, this, that. So the shir will sound somewhat philosophical, maybe a little esoteric, maybe a little on the intellectual side, not on the practical side, but it's very practical. As I said in the last year, when you talk about principles, and then you really, if it's a true principle, if it's MS and it's a true principle, then it filters down into every prat. If it's a true klal, then it affects every prat. And sometimes it's if it's hit on the nose, we need examples. It's true. You know, theoretically, we just have to talk about a klal, or let's say two klalim, three klalim, four klalim, and then as you bump up against the case, you go, oh, this should kick in, and this will be the applicability and the manifestation of that klal in this case. He came home late, and he didn't care that I had supper prepared for him, and he didn't even apologize, and he didn't tell me where he was, and he didn't say thank you, and he forgot my birthday, and he didn't forget our anniversary, and he never takes me out, and he doesn't take care of the kids, and, right, and. But it all fits into the klal. So, like, the klal won't solve everything, which is why we need workshops and examples, which I won't do tonight. So there's value to each. But the nature of tonight's shiur, and I assume no one expected differently, because it's not possible, is indeed to talk, to step back and to talk broadly and conceptually and intellectually and philosophically about the idea. And then it has practical applicability, and you can and should apply it to situations if they arise. Last time I said one yisod, which was only, it wasn't half jokingly, it was true. It's true. It's, I said that one yisod that women should know, just to review it very quickly, is that everybody needs something. Men and women are different, whether it's Mars or Venus, or they're different. Zachar and Akeva are different. They have different, they're built differently. They have different physical needs, different emotional needs. They react differently to stimuli. They think differently. And the most anti-Jewish aspect to feminism is not the feminism that says women should get equal pay for equal work. That's of course true, and they should, and in halacha they always did. But it's this idea to erase the differences, right? And we believe in differences. Hamadul min kodesh l'chol, binor l'choshech, bin yisrael l'amim, right? There's a difference between a zachar and a nekeva, and it's foolish to think otherwise. If you believe in a borei olam, then you believe in differences, and there's differences between kohanim, levim, and yisraelim, and there's differences between a bachor and not a bachor, and there's differences between an ish and an isha. And that's, and we don't want to erase those differences. It's absurd. So each one has a different need. And when I talked to the man, I talked about what a woman's main need in a marriage is. And when I spoke to the women last time, I spoke about that men need respect from their wives. They have to feel that their wives look up to them. And you have to give them this need. That was last time's yisod. And you have to figure out, if you're going to have shalom bayis, you're going to have to figure out, you know, even if you see glaring faults, but you look for something to respect. It will be there. And you focus on those things. And if you treat him like a melech, the way the Rambam says, I guarantee, he'll treat you like a malka, and he'll want to make you happy and feel loved and secure and taken care of. But you have to give him what he needs. It's part of nurturing. Women are very good at nurturing. So you have to nurture your husbands to a certain degree. Hopefully not like a mother. We'll talk about a little of that today. It's not good if the relationship is a sort of mother-child, just like it's no good if the relationship, if someone marries someone and it's sort of a father figure. It's also not good. We'll talk about now exactly what I mean. To some degree, a woman should look up to her husband and give him respect, and that's sort of like a father figure. And the woman is the nurturer of the house. So we'll see. But Al Kaponim, that's what we talked about last time. That, in a sense, you nurture your husband by giving men need respect. Women have other needs. Men need respect. They have to feel that their wives look up to them. And you do that, then there'll be putty in your hands. Okay, now we're up to today. Some of what I say might sound a little unfair, but I'm talking to women. When I talk to men, I talk differently, right? So it sounds like, hey, that's not fair, but again, I'm cognizant of the fact that I'm talking to women, and therefore the focus is on your responsibilities, what you have to do. You say, why do we have all the burden? Because I'm talking to you, that's why. When I talk to the men, they complain the other way, that I put the whole burden on them. HaKadosh Baruch Hu apparently made people that they need relationships. They don't exist in a vacuum. They need relationships. And we all have different types of relationships. We have relationships with parents, with children, with our spouses, with friends, other shul members, other school mothers. We have all different relationships with all different people. And from what we see of life, they're crucial to the development of a human being. I think it's part of what Rashi says in Bereishis, that Hashem is Yachid Ba'olamo, and he said if Adam is Yachid, then he will be mistaken for a god. Whatever exactly that means, but certainly to me it means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw that a person needs another person or a relationship to reach Shleimus, right? That's Hashem is Hashem. A person is essentially different. But when there was just Hashem b'shamayim, Rashi says, and just Adam b'aretz, so we could, oh, there's an equivalence here. Look, just Hashem is Echad and a person is Echad. So a person needs a relationship. He has to relate. And that's already why it's not Hashem. Hashem needs nothing else. Hashem is objective reality. That's the Rambam's description. Objective reality means that I don't need anything. Hashem's Shleimus is just what he is, what it is. Hashem is Hashem. And that's a Shleimus. A person needs relationships. And we know, and this is what Chazal tell us, and maybe we've experienced it, or maybe we're puzzled why we don't experience it. The greatest joy that a person reaches and the most shlemus that a person feels is the intense relationship of a man and wife. And therefore, when it doesn't work out, it's extremely painful. That's why there's so much pain when it's supposed to be perfect and joyful and it's not, so it's very painful. And there's nothing more painful than having a fight, and you go to sleep angry, and there's anger in the household, and each person feels alone, right? And it's a very painful feeling because you're not supposed to be alone. You're talking about your spouse. You're supposed to be together. And what happens all too often, and this is why we sometimes have to go to marriage counselors, is that when a person's in pain, they react, and they're almost not responsible for their reaction. They're hurt, so they lash out. They react in pain because they want to. It's like a defense mechanism. So you react in pain, and you lash out, and you say things you really don't want to say, and you bring up things you don't want to bring up because of the intensity of the pain of. Like, what's going on here? It's so painful when a relationship that's supposed to have so much joy to it and so much shlemus to it is bringing instead loneliness and pain and hurt. So it's lash back. You want to push it away, thinking that will be protection. Unfortunately, the only thing it does is it increases the loneliness and the pain and the hurt. Some people just give up, meaning they're in a relationship. We're talking now about marriage. It's really true about every relationship. Sometimes this is true about maybe friendship, but some people are like they have yish and they just decide they'll be mistapik b'muat. That's what they call it. And they say, Enechanami, marriage is supposed to be something that I don't see it by me. I don't see it. I don't feel it. It just doesn't feel that way. So they're mistapik b'muat. And either they think that it doesn't exist, and no one has it, and it's some super-duper ideal that's good for Sheva Brachas, but it's not a real thing. It doesn't exist. Or they say, I guess I married the wrong person. And it's too painful to try. Maybe the idea of a marriage counselor is more acceptable than in the past, but it's sometimes too painful to try and to fail and to try again. So all too many people, and this is really, why I wish more people were here, because I talk to many of you, not you who are in this room, the general people that are members of Beis Tefillah, people that are not members of Beis Tefillah. And there's a lot of people walking around in pain and in hurt and in puzzlement, wondering if what's wrong? Where did I go wrong? Where did he go wrong? Why is there something wrong? What happened to marriage the way Chazal depicted? What happened? And the Messiah, that's very sad when you're Messiah, because you're really suffering. People suffer. It's a suffering. If it's supposed to be a certain way, and it's not, so a person, the human, you feel a chisaron, you feel there's something missing. That's so sad. It's so sad to walk around feeling a lack and a chisaron, and it should be so much better. This is why people look elsewhere. Look elsewhere for fulfillment, for happiness, for joy. Sometimes it's in a career. Sometimes they just devote, say, okay, I'm going to get joy for my children. Right? I give up, and I'm going to have joy for my children or for my career, my job. Sometimes, Rahman al-Islam, it results in looking for happiness and fulfillment and joy in osiridic ways. This is what happens, and it's born of a frustration with, it's not necessary for me to say that I'm not excusing it, but it's to be understood as, it's very frustrating. It's very frustrating when you just don't feel that joy, that shleimus that you were told and you thought, and the body, not the body, the human psyche sort of feels that this is supposed to be so much more. And it's really sad. It's sad. Okay. So what I want to give over tonight is really a certain attitude. Again, this is not... it's a shalom bias. I'm talking about a general attitude that I think is lacking, maybe, by men, by women. I'm talking to women now, by everyone. Every person has the I, right? There's me. Every person has a the ego. Every person has a sense of self. Let's say. I'll talk from a man's perspective. Well, it's true. I decide to date. I'm going to go out. A woman saying, I'm going to go out. So I am me. I want to have my life. I'm going to live my life. So I have certain needs. And, Abishta made a world that people get married. So I make a list. I make a list of my list that I want my spouse to have. Right, I want him to be intelligent and funny and spontaneous and a Baal Chesed and a Baal Midos and a Masmid and a wage earner and having sympathy for others. And you know, we have a long list, 20 things on the list. And the pshat in that list is that this is what I want. I want to have a helpmate for me. And then you get married, you go out, and someone tells you, oh, you're so unrealistic to have these 20 things, cut it down to 10 things. So you cut it down to 10 things, but the mindset is that I want to have someone helping me, being with me, being my companion, who has these milas, and this is what I want. And then you get married, and everything's good. It seems good, and then the bubble bursts, and all of a sudden you find out, it's inevitable, everyone has flaws, everyone has chesroinus, everyone has flaws. It's like, if... to a man, I would say, you hired a secretary or you hired a cook, and now you find out they don't do as good a job as you thought. So you have someone, you hired a CEO to run your life, and it's not good. He's stinkily irresponsible. You see laziness. You see he's not sympathetic. He's not understanding. He's self-centered, selfish. Doesn't have such a great sense of humor. So there's a disillusionment sets in, and it's like, okay, so I'm okay. I'm me, and I'm okay. And the other person has flaws. And I could decide to live with it, or I could... Really, I want to fire them and look for a different secretary, look for a different CEO. Or I want to train them to be good, like you train an animal, you know, it has certain... So I'm going to train them how to be good, because I'm right and they're wrong, or I'm wrong. Someone is right and someone's wrong. But the mindset is individual, and there's someone else that has qualities and chesreinus, and if there's chesreinus, so I have to decide what to do about those chesreinus. And if we fight, so like every time two people fight, when two individuals have an argument or fight, so one person's right and one person's wrong, maybe one person's mostly right, partially right, and if I compromise, so I'm being either a martyr, because really I'm right, but for the sake of Shalom Bayis, I'm going to compromise. This is wrong. What I'm saying now is not correct. But for the sake of Shalom Bayis, I will compromise. So even though I'm right, so I will accept certain chesreinus and certain flaws. So the mental attitude that is all too often the baggage that everyone has is that it's still me, it's still my life, and you're here to help me in whatever way. And therefore, one person's right and one person's wrong. And one person has milas, one person has chesreinus. And it's working out or it's not working out. I said that Hashem is Echad. And He created man. So what happened? He created man, and man was Echad. And without, however we understand it, like when Hashem does things, Rashi and Chumash always describes like Hashem did something and then realized there was a problem and He fixed it up. That's really childish, right? Hashem doesn't do things and then realize. That's just the way Chazal presented, or maybe the way history unfolds, because as we all know, we become cognizant of certain truths. A human being becomes cognizant of certain truths when there's a problem and the problem is solved. So Hashem does that. He'll do something and say, oh, this is no good this way. I'm going to fix it up. Silly. Hashem. The answer is that's how it unfolds in the human experience so that we could learn from it. Because otherwise we wouldn't learn from it. It would just be a certain way. And we wouldn't realize the quality. If there's no choshech, we wouldn't realize the quality of or. So Hashem does something, and oh, this is no good, this is not good, I have to change it. So say, oh, look, it changed. And then we chap, oh. So a person was echad. And really, a person is supposed to be echad. Meaning, we're supposed to emulate Hashem and create a certain unity in who we are. But it's not the unity of Hashem, that's impossible. Hashem is, by definition, Echad. A person is not. A person is Zohar and Akeva. The unity of a person is the oneness and wholeness of a person is Zohar and Akeva. So when Hashem first created Adam, Zohar and Akeva, there was a certain Shleimus there. It was a cobbled together Shleimus, because there were Zohar elements and Akeva elements. Zohar and Akeva Bra'am. Hashem has no elements. Hashem is perfect unity. Hashem is not cobbled together. it sounds childish, but it's a very deep concept. Chayyus Halavu spends pages and pages and pages in Shar HaYichud, the first Shar, trying to explain this. Hashem is the perfect Echad. There's no parts to Hashem. When we say Hashem is Rachum, Hashem is this, Hashem is that, it's just a manner of speaking. Hashem has no moving parts to Him. Hashem has no unmoving parts to Him. Hashem has no parts. Being one means whole and complete and total Echad, perfect Echad. A person was already Zachar Unikeva, but Hashem said, this is no good. This is going to be an... The Malachim will think, the Bria will think that this is Echad also. I'm going to Eselo Ezer Kenegdo. So what Hashem did was He ripped apart the Zachar and the Nekeva. And then they come back together. But the goal of Shalom Bayis, the goal of the Zachar and the Nekeva, what we're doing when we get married, and I don't know if anybody in the room, I mean, I guess some people don't get married. It's true. And Hashem has other plans for them. There's a certain norm, just as an aside, there's a certain norm in the Bria, and then some people, let's say, are blind. Some people are born blind. Some people have different types of lives. And it's all part, they all play their role in the Bria, and they're all playing a vital role in the Bria, and only Hashem knows what everybody, this person is supposed to not have children, and this person is supposed to not be married, and this person, you know. But I'm talking now the norm. Certainly, tonight's shir can accept what Chazal talk about marriage as an ideal, and as a shleimus, and as a joy, and as a simcha, and as shechina shruya b'neihem. Just to explain, if there are people that are not like that, it doesn't mean they are flawed, chas v'shalom, and it doesn't mean that their lives are a train wreck, chas v'shalom. You know, there's a big world out there, and Hashem has to plug up every hole has to be plugged up. Every role has to be played by somebody. There's a lot of things to accomplish in the world, and some can only be accomplished by someone who's not married, and some things can only be accomplished by someone without children. But they're the exception. It's safe. There's nothing. You know, that's the reality. This exception. Hashem made a Bria where most people will go get married. So when you're getting married, and Chazal discuss it in such glowing terms, and we talked about Shechina b'neihem, you're really recreating and reproducing and emulating, right? You're emulating Hashem. And this is the deep, deep meaning of Shechina b'neihem, that you're emulating HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When the Shalom b'neihem, the Zachar and the Keva are becoming one. They're becoming one. They're acting together, they're sharing, they're two parts to a bias, and there's the Zachar part and the Nekeva part, and as trite as it sounds, they're functioning as a team. But the whole mindset now is different. It's not I am me and someone's here to help me. Hashem made an institution of marriage, so I should have a helpmate. I should have someone to help me do the things I can't do, to be my third foot, to be my wage earner, if I can't earn wages, to take care of my children, if I'm talking to men, right? To have children, because I can't have a child. Hashem, thank you, could have quite easily made that a man doesn't need a woman. It wouldn't have been a man, right? It would be Zachar and a Keva Bra'am. So it just would have been one conglomeration, and he would have had children, and he would have done, I say he because I'm a man, I apologize, right? This Bria of Zachar and a Keva would have had children and done the dishes and gone to work. Hashem made a Bria where two people have to act together as one, and emulate Hashem in that way. Create a unity. Create a oneness. That's
So that's what marriage is. That's what Shalom Bayis is. It's almost as if I'm saying the idea is to take two imperfect people. Again, it's like, okay, I am me, and I want someone to help me. So I draw up a list of 30 milos that I want, because I want someone that's smart and rich and funny and intelligent and insightful and spontaneous and wonderful and empathetic and caring and loving. Right? Okay. No, it's not. It's that two people should learn to live together as one. That's what you're supposed to be doing. And, right? And when Hashem broke apart the Zohar and Akeva, and now they're being put together, it doesn't fit perfectly, right? It's not Cinderella with the slipper. It's not like that. Because there's rough edges, as we all know. Because as people grow up, from when they're born, they're alone. It's just them. So they develop personalities, and they develop chesroinus, and they develop the way they react to certain stimuli, and they have different lives. And this one grew up in South America, and this one grew up in Israel, or in America, or in Brazil, or in Canada. Like, so they had different parents, different social circles, different. Or it could be the same. One's Bnei Brak, one's Yerushalayim. You're getting married in order to emulate Hashem. You're getting married in order to emulate Hashem. You're getting married to learn how to live with another person. Not just to learn how to live with another person, like you learn how to live with a bunkmate or a roommate in a dormitory or a bunkmate in a camp, but you're learning how to live with another person as one. And it's different. A Zohar and a Keva are different. This is what Hashem wants you to emulate him, because one's from Mars and one's from Venus. Yeah. Do I have that right? Do I have this right? Two planets? Did I get that wrong? Mars and Venus? They're different. They think differently. They have different systems of logic. They have different concepts of time. they're different. And this is what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to come together as one. You're supposed to learn to live with another human being who's different than you. Who's different. You're supposed to be different. And you're supposed to take those differences. The compromising is not a weakness. I'm not settling, because really I'm right. There's no right and wrong. It's learning to live together. Right and wrong is for two chavrusas learning something and saying pshat. So one's right and one's wrong. There's no right and wrong. It's two people who have to learn to live together as one. They have to become closer than two people could possibly come. I mean, it's no... forgive me, it's important to hear this. That's why the marital act exactly is that. That's what it is. Right? They're becoming one. That's what it is, because that's what marriage is. It's not, again, not a coincidence. It's not just, you know, Hashem picked this way, you know. Wow. No. This is it. This is Zohar in the cave of Bra'am. So, and Zohar and Akeva are very, very different personalities, and they grew up differently, and they're so different. And it's not you who are getting someone to help you or to aid you, and you have your list of milos, and then you're disappointed. It's two imperfect people, and the quicker you realize it, the better. Everybody's better off. Everybody has chesroinus and flaws and issues, and right, people are not perfect. People are imperfect beings. And the point is to reach shleimus through the oneness, through learning to live together. Hashem, I see it constantly. constantly. I always joke about writing my PhD on this. I'm getting old, though. I got to get a BA quick. It's so common. It's invariably true that to have shalom bayis and to function together properly requires the tikkun midos that each person is flawed with. You manage to pick the shidduch that's exactly pushing the buttons. That's exactly pushing your buttons. Because Hashem wants you to emulate Hashem. He wants you to become echad, to become one. And that's going to entail, not compromise, adarabah, that's what you're supposed to construct. You're supposed to construct living together with another person and becoming so close, closer than a roommate, closer than a bunkmate, becoming one, the oneness of Hashem. The way it was when Hashem first made the Bria and was, so to speak, worried that people are going to say, oh, look, Hashem's echad and Adam is echad. Because Zohar Unakeva, that's the echad, is when they come together as one. And to do that, they each have to not compromise. They have to learn to live together as one. They have to learn to accommodate another person. They have to learn to reach out. They have to learn to accommodate another human being. To lose that sense of me, of ego, right? Kabbalistically, Hashem, to just create anything, had to like step back from who he is, because nothing can really exist outside Hashem. So for anything to exist, Hashem had to be mitzamtzem himself. To be echad, you have to be mitzamtzem yourself. You have to lose your sense of self and start thinking in the plural. And to make that work is the avoda of your life. And that's why Shechina Beinayim means that you're emulating the echad of Hashem. In doing this, you will be refining your personality. You will be misakin your midos. It's not going to work otherwise. You won't become echad. So, and this is why a person's perfection is in marriage. It's more than halacha when it says al ken yazov ish as other v'simoy v'davak v'ishto v'hayu l'basar echad. Someone comes. I mean, these shailas come up all the time. Conflict between spouses and parents. It comes up, and it's not just halacha. It's conceptually, the answer is very clear. A person's first loyalty is to their spouse, not to their parents. It's pushed like that. I mean, maybe you should always ask a shaila in case you're going about it the wrong way. Because you have to treat your parents a certain way. You can't just... But there's no question, it's not only halacha, it's conceptual, and that's what the pasuk is saying. And people have conflicts so often. Conflict shouldn't be. A person should, the spouse is your first loyalty, your first achrayus, your mother wants you to go shopping, you know, with her, and your husband wants you, it's true to a man too, your father or your mother wants you to do this, but your wife wants you to go shopping, your wife wants you to take her shopping. Your first, the parents and a child are not one. They're not one. The parent gives, the child takes. Right, a husband and wife share. It's a very unique relationship of sharing, of having one life, and there's no giver and no taker. You're sharing. You're giving and receiving. You're sharing. Each one is doing for the other one, and they're working at making it work. And if there's flaws, it's not the pshat, oh, I picked the wrong one, and I have to settle for chesroinus, and I'm resigned to my fate, or I'll be a martyr,
or I'll be resentful. Hashem gave you the spouse with the intention that you work at making it work. It's lechatchila. That's what you're supposed to do, because you're taking two people. The job of marriage, what you're doing, is you're taking two people and making them one, like Hashem. So now, someone maybe is saying, "You mean the more chesronos my husband has, the better it is?" And the answer is, obviously, at some point, you know. Like I said, you have to. It has to be someone that you feel you can be you could share things with, right? And everybody has chesronos, I said. At some point, and just to be clear, it shouldn't sound like weird. At some point, it's not a question of a chesaron, but it's I can't be with this person. I can't be with this person. It's just, there's no way it could fit, no matter how much I work, or no matter, it's not a question of accepting certain flaws because nobody's perfect. And we're not accepting flaws. You see, I just fell into the trap of saying what I just spent the whole year saying. It's not like that. It's not accepting flaws. It's working at living with another person. And everybody has flaws, and you're going to accommodate each other. You're going to figure out a modus operandi or a there's some other word there. Well, you're going to figure out how, anybody know modus vivendi, something like that? Modus vivendi. You're going to figure out how to live together with the chesroinus and with everything. Everybody's going to try to work on themselves to make it easier. But that's, we accept the flaws. Again, as an aside, in case you're wondering, at some point the flaws are so many or so deep or so problematic that this is not a person that I want to do this with. It's not just a question of chesroinus and flaws, but it's a question of, you know, the whole person is like upgefrecht. So at some point, that point is reached. But just that there's, as Hashem gave us marriage to have shalom bayis, that necessarily entails a process of growth. This is what I came here tonight to say. It necessarily entails that, because the point is to take two people and to emulate Hashem, and each person is flawed and each person is different, bedafka different. Hashem could have made that, you know, like, why did Hashem make the Mars Venus thing? Like, why? Why did Hashem give us a system of marriage that has a built-in obstacle course, because we think differently and we understand things differently and we have different, because we're emulating Hashem, we're becoming echad, because we have to work at becoming echad, we have to work at learning to live with someone else, accommodating someone else, fitting with someone else, being echad with someone else. So you accept the deficiencies of the other person, you work at accepting them, because you have to become echad. And so of course each person is supposed to also work on themselves to make it easier to become echad. But that's ultimately the goal, and that's what I believe it means, Shechina Beinehem. I have to grow in order to create the Shechina in the household, in order to become echad with my spouse. That's what each person is supposed to be thinking and working at. It's lechatchila work to take two different people with different chesroinus and to make them echad. As I said, all this is very theoretical. So I'll conclude by just mentioning two areas, very real and practical, which are, as we'll see in a moment, manifestations of what I just talked about. And if you want to say, okay, so what should I go home with? I came home with a shtickle Torah, you know, with a tape. What did I come home with? You came home with a principle, but two manifestations of the principle will change the whole household. The principle really changes your whole life. But if just to give an example, as I said, a practical manifestation of an application of the principle is vitur and hakaras hatov. If each spouse, and now look what you're doing. Look what you're doing. When you're being mevater, you're actively giving up your sense of self, because you're right. You have certain, you're right, and you're entitled, and it should be a certain way. But you're being mevater. You're losing yourself. You're losing your sense of self. You're giving up your sense of self for the purpose of becoming one. You're mevater to the other person, so that you bond and you see things together with one eye. You're able to approach something together, sharing as one. And how did you do it? By vitur. So that's one area of a marriage of creating shalom bias, which we there's hundreds of examples of a vitur. But certainly, without the background and the piece of Torah, we all understand, or should understand, or are taught, or read in the countless books and articles that we read about shalom bias, is that an all-important midah to have it is to be mevater. I'm explaining the philosophical underpinnings of vitur. When you're mevater, it means you give in. Your mochel being right, you say, okay, either you say, I'll meet you halfway, or we'll do it your way. You're mevater on being right. You're mevater on your rights. You're mevater on your entitlement. You're mevater. So you're losing your rightful self for the sake of the oneness of the bias. And the other is hakaras hatov, to appreciate your spouse and to express that appreciation. Because the reason it's so hard at so often to express hakaras hatov, and we learned in Chayvus Halvavus and Shara Avodas Elokim Sunday night, Chayvus Halvavus with Hashem, vis-a-vis Hashem, insists that we express our hakaras hatov. It's not just an idea, a philosophy, a nice thought, but he insists that we express it. Thank you, Hashem. You gave me this. I appreciate it. I understand what you gave me. I am aware of it, and I appreciate it. And according to the Chayim, this is so bait. Hakaras HaTov, you know what you're doing when you're being Maketov? You're really making yourself very vulnerable. When I'm Maketov to you, I'm saying that I couldn't have done it myself. That part of you is in me. I was able to do this because of your input. I have this quality because of your input. You gave me this, and I'm aware of it, and I'm expressing that I'm aware of it, and that I appreciate it, and I understand that that's the dynamic that just happened. And that's a vulnerability. I am admitting that I couldn't have done it myself, and this is why Hashem was like, the ultimate hakaras hatov, because we say to Hashem, we couldn't do anything ourselves without your help. But in the bias, when you say thank you, and you say, oh, maketov, you did this for me, I appreciate it, thank you for doing this, and you're really leaving yourself open to a vulnerability. You're saying, I need you, I needed you to do this, I am not me anymore. There's a piece of you in me. I went shopping, whatever I accomplished, the house is quiet or it's clean, but thank you for, you know, you just spent 3 hours, 4 hours cleaning the house, and he the man's a hero. He picked up his sock off the floor. And he wants to be... And you say, thank you for picking up your sock. And you know. But you know what you're doing when you say that? You're saying that the house wouldn't be clean without you. I didn't clean the house. We cleaned the house. When I'm makir tov and I express appreciation, I am saying that we did it. So these two things, which even without this whole fantastic piece of Torah that I gave, is anyway true. Any class in Shalom Bayis is going to talk about Vitur, and it's going to talk about Akaras HaTov. Right? I'm telling you that the philosophical underpinnings of these two pillars of Shalom Bayis are to create Echad. They directly create oneness. Vitur through my giving up what I want, the way I see things, the way I understand things, what's important to me, what's vital to me sometimes, what's essential to me, in the interest of becoming one with you. And when I'm makir tov and I express my akaras hatov, I'm admitting that you are part of my success. Wow. It's not easy. You have to mean it. You have to say it. You have to say it even if you don't mean it. Eventually you'll mean it. Because you can't do it without the spouse. Because Hashem created a world that this is the unit. This is the team. So these two things. So now I'm being practical. Vitur and Akaras HaTov, expression of Akaras HaTov. But to express it without a smirk means you have to feel it. To express it without rolling your eyes is you have to talk it. You have to appreciate what they're doing. Even if it's small, it'll grow. If you show appreciation, every person responds to the stimuli of Akaras HaTov by wanting to do more because it feels good. And the reason it feels so good is because it's really a major statement. It's not just a cheap, superficial thank you. The real Hakaras HaTov is much more than a thank you. It's a thank you, I was incomplete, and now, thanks to you, we are complete. We did this together. You are in me. What I did has your input. You're here. And Vitor is the other way. And these are things which are... Like I said, it sounds philosophical, esoteric, but these two things, which are pillars in Shalom Bayis, are really ways of achieving the echad that we want to achieve. So, marriage, Shalom Bayis, is that each person has to grow and steig in order to create the echad, and that's the Shechina Beinayim, is to be echad. So the whole thing is set up that two people who are different and flawed, not only are they different, but they're flawed. Not only are they flawed, but they're different. Like, wow. Like Hashem really gave us a peckle here. But that's the way it is. L'chatchila. It's not like you made the wrong choice, but you're going to settle. I'm miserable because I expected so much and I got so much less. Chas v'shalom. This is your task. This is your role. Your role is to learn how to live with this person. That's what you're supposed to do. That's what you're doing. You're learning how to live with this person. So that's perfection. Making it echad with the spouse, with the other person. Okay.